You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode number 557. News editor and we're coming at you from Ontario. I'm covered in mosquito bites and I'm losing my mind because there's a demonic rooster that will not shut up. I'm here with features editor and published author John Gentile. How are you tonight?
From now on, I will demand to be referred to as published author. Like, no matter what, like if I go to the dentist, they'll be like, John Gentile. No, published author, John Gentile. So thank you for that, Emma. Thank you.
Hey. And also here is the incomparable Hallie Bullet. Hallie, how are you tonight?
Good. Sipping my old lady stevia-flavored ginger ale, as usual. I just want you all to know that most times we're recording, I'm sipping a stevia-flavored ginger ale.
What's stevia? Is that like Sweet and Low?
No, it's like even nerdier than Sweet and Low, because Sweet and Low is just like, oh, I'm trying to watch my weight. Stevia is like, I'm trying to watch my weight. Also, I don't want to get cancer. So it's like an all natural fake sugar. It's only for nerds and hippies.
Does it taste different? Like,
The thing is, I don't love stevia, but ginger has such a like strong flavor that to me, it kind of like masks what I normally find to be like a little bit of like a cloying, like aftertaste that stevia has. So I just down these things, man. It's so good. And it's like no guilt. There's like nothing in this that I have any reason to feel guilty about.
Ginger ale does rule. I love ginger ale. It's a good beverage.
Yeah.
Well, that was the least punk topic to start a punk rock podcast about. Let's get to the news, people.
Yeah, let's do it.
So speaking of punk rock... So Fest has announced their COVID-19 or updated COVID-19 protocols. So they are requiring a negative PCR COVID test that must be obtained no more than 48 hours before you get your tickets and you check in and all that, or proof of vaccination to enter the festival. But they're pushing proof of negative tests for everyone, recommending them for people who are fully vaccinated as well as people who are unvaccinated as an extra measure of protection. So no matter which one you choose, you have to present a valid photo ID so they make sure you're not scamming them and it's your own information. So they're also pushing children 12 and under and those who are unvaxxed to wear a mask at all times, and masks will be required in all indoor venues, while waiting in lines, when ordering food, merch, or beverages, inside restrooms, and whenever you can't physically distance. So if you're presenting proof of vaccination, you can present an original copy, a photocopy, or like a picture on your phone. So right now, you don't need an app, or you don't need to upload to anywhere. It's just, here you go, look at it, check it out, it matches up, that's good. And they posted a thing like, oh, well, why do we have these policies in place? And they're just, you know, explaining, it's basically just think of others, ensure the safety of not only yourself, but the people around you attending, working, and performing. And one thing I thought was interesting was all the other festivals and places that have been rolling out COVID precautions, or not precautions, but like protocols, they've gotten a lot of negative responses online. But with the Fest one, what I've seen so far is it's mainly positive feedback, and it's mainly positive comments. Like, I haven't seen many people saying like, oh, this sucks and my freedoms and all that business. So is it because of the emphasis on testing? Like, they're like, oh, we want everyone to get tested and everything. Or is it the people who go to Fest, or did they have a different mindset than everyone else? Or not everyone else, but people who typically go to other festivals.
To Fest are the coolest. That's my take. They're cool. I've been going to Fest like for the last 20 years. These people are cool. They're my friends. It's a fucking cool festival. I'm like proud and totally unsurprised that the reaction to this has been cool amongst those people. Now for me, I'm happy they're doing this. This seems to be where festivals and lots of shows and tours are landing. For me, I think this is probably the smartest way for them to do it. I personally thought I was going to go to Fest, and I'm now not going to be able to go, because for me at this point with like infection rates on the rise, I probably personally, because I go home to an unvaccinated child, I would probably only feel comfortable if they were only allowing vaccinated people, which is not to say that I don't understand the decision not to do it that way, but just for me personally to be comfortable going, that's probably what I would need. And there are some tours and bands that are starting to announce that is their policy. I know Guided by Voices just announced that's going to be the policy for their upcoming tour. Everyone's got to show proof of vaccination. But it's just, you know, it is crazy to me, because I really thought, you guys, that I was going to go to Fest this year. I thought I was going to go with my husband, and I thought I was going to go with my baby. And I thought that my kid, well, he's not a baby anymore. I thought that my little guy might be able to like put on some cans and maybe like, you know, see a show, or, you know, maybe like one of the outside, you know, I just thought I'd be able to like bring Cal to see maybe like a band play. And I just, now it's crazy to look back on and to realize that I just had I was so overly optimistic and possibly naive about how well the vaccine rollout was going to go, how many people were going to be willing to take it, how much this situation was going to be under control by the fall. I just obviously had no understanding whatsoever. So, you know, so I'm a little disappointed, but I'm glad that Fest is still happening. And I'm glad to hear that they're taking precautions, and that most people seem to be like, they're pretty cool about it. John, do you have thoughts on this?
Bummer. That sucks. You can't go to Fest. I'm sorry to hear that. I mean,
yeah,
I definitely get it. That's, I mean, like I've been looking at punk rock bowling for like the past 8 months. If I found out like next week I couldn't go, I would be bummed out. Yeah. So that sucks. That sucks. However, Halle Bullet, consolation, it looked like Summer Soiree 5 wasn't going to happen for multiple reasons, because I asked like 19 bands and none of them would commit, or one that would commit would be like super shady. I'd be like, well, how much do you need for a guarantee? And they'd be like, we got to go to Texas first and then we'll be there. I'm like, Texas, what? So anyway, point being, Summer Soiree 5, Halle Bullet, I don't want to jinx it, looking good right now. You can bring Cal on down to Summer Soiree 5. This winter, perhaps? We'll see. Anyways, the point being.
All right.
But don't feel pressure, mind you. Anyways, listen.
But just based on our last, are you going to be requiring proof of vaccination? Because that's the thing that I'm saying. Is like, that's the thing that, just because of Cal, that's the thing that I would feel like I would need in order to feel safe, you know?
That's a great question. I actually hadn't considered it until you just gave your little spiel right then, frankly. Yeah. I don't know at this point. I mean, my what's the word I'm looking for? My true self, my heart says it's not cool to require that. because at this point people can get vaccinated. But my head says, well, maybe this time you have to make a sacrifice and require it. And I'm not anti-vax, mind you, at all. You know, I got vaxxed myself. I'm just not comfortable with forcing people to get medical procedures they don't want. But on the other hand, I'm all for people getting polio vaccine. The only thing is, this is a newish vaccine, which I've said before. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that's hinging my decision. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know. The answer is probably yes, frankly, you know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think this is a fine policy to have. I think it's probably just the most like it. I get why this is becoming the standard by which people are, you know, going forward with their shows and their festivals. It's just a personal thing for me as the parent of an unvaccinated kid. It's just, I have to hold myself to like a little bit of a higher standard, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you're wrong. And in fact, I'm saying you very well may be right. I just, I'm not a scientist, first of all. You know what I mean? If I had all the data in front of me, and it's hard to get that data because there's so many people that bend things to be what they really aren't. You know what I mean? More so on the anti-vax side than the vax side, frankly, you know? But I don't know. Well, it's not going to be till the winter if it happens anyway, so we'll see, you know.
Yeah, and maybe we'll be in a different place in the winter, and maybe I can bring Cal. He's got this cutie set of, like, you know, the big, like, headphone-y ear protection that kids wear. He's got, like, the cutest set, and, like, so far he's only been able to wear them one freaking time, you guys. One time. He wore them to the Elvis Costello Blondie show that I took him to when he was 6 months old, before all this BS went down. And like, I thought he was going to be wearing those things all the time. I was like, so excited to get those. I was like, yes, I'm going to get to bring my kid to stuff. It's going to be rad. I'm going to take him to monster truck rallies. I'm going to take him all this loud shit.
Monster truck rallies.
Yeah. And now I haven't been able to take him to anything, man.
Do you like monster truck rallies? Is that like your thing?
I love monster truck rallies. Oh.
I've never been to one. Maybe I should go some.
Most fun.
I have changed my mind, and here's why. I will require proof of vaccination if that's what it takes to get Halle Bullet down, because my friends are more important than strangers, so that I will do it. So we'll see.
All right. That's very sweet. I won't hold you to it, but
don't feel required to come down either. You know what I mean? And
I'd love to come down. How fun would that be?
I will require M. Moore to come down from Canada, though, mind you. Anyway.
Yeah. I'll get in my, like, Canuck Crusher monster truck, and I'll come right down.
Emma,
amazing.
What area do you live in, Emma?
So it's, like, it's in the city of Kawartha Lake, so that's our municipality, and I'm about 3 hours out of Toronto.
All right, let's see. Adam White drove down one time, so.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
I could do it.
The point being is I actually approve of the way Fest is doing this, frankly, as opposed to punk rock bowling, which I'm not really a fan of. Like, Fest is just saying, show the paper card and show your ID. We're not going to scan it. We're not going to take a picture. You know, that's what we're going to do, you know. So if that's what it's got to be, I think maybe that's cool. I'm really not – I still got to sign up with my stupid – the punk rock bowling one and give them my stupid social security number and my medical history and all this bullshit, you know. But I think I'm going to do it just because I want to go to punk rock bowling. So it's – I don't know. Maybe I'm being weak. Maybe I shouldn't go to punk rock bowling because I'm not comfortable giving private companies all that info when they're really not entitled to it. But what am I going to do? This is the future. I mean, honestly, if you told people this in the 70s, this is what you have to do to go to a concert, they would be absolutely horrified. They really would. We definitely have relaxed our dedication to privacy, and we don't really care, which is bizarre. There's this whole thing that like teens and whatever live in a post-privacy world where they don't even necessarily have the concept of privacy, which I don't know, man. Anyways, I think Fest is doing it right. I think it's cool. I'm not going to Fest, but I think they're making the right choice.
Do you think it's like – do you think that on some level it's just that Fest feels that they can trust their attendees more than punk rock bowling does? Because it does really interest me that N is saying that the online reaction has been very different from the Fest people. Like, is there some aspect where Fest is just like, these are surely there are a lot of dummies that are going to show up, but by and large, Fest people are like fucking true blue do the right thing, punks. And maybe Fest feels like they don't have to go do an app and get crazy like that. They just trust people to be honest.
I agree with you on a caveat. I would not say that the punk rock bowling, that the Fest crew is actually more moral than any other festival. And actually, I would say they're probably less moral. But I really would say that. Why? Because in my experience, those kind of beardo punk bands, pop punk band, those kind of pop punk bands, in my experience, they do a lot of talking and they say, I'm right and I'm just and blah, blah, blah. And A, they're hypocrites and are actually really shitty people, and I could name a whole bunch. But also, they take these high principle stands, not because they deep down truly care about these principles, and even they actually might think they do, but they're really out for the vengeance and they enjoy the vengeance. That's my perspective. I could be wrong. I mean, honestly,
what kind of vengeance? What are you talking about? Vengeance against who? The plot thickens. What are you talking about, Sean
Gentile? I'm trying to think of a safe example that won't get me in a jam, but I'm
not trying to get you in a jam. We can move on.
I'm not going to back away from the question. Let me think of my example, but I'm going to talk about something else before I bring up my example. Okay. So to answer your question though, does Fest trust their people with regard to COVID more than punk rock bowling? The answer is yes, they certainly do. And honestly, the Fest crowd I think is more reasonable with regards to COVID, because the punk rock bowling organizers, much to their credit, have taken a very strong stance on COVID. I just disagree with the clear app that they use, you know. But I agree with their stance on COVID, mind you. But the punk rock bowling has a Facebook group that's run by them, but like anyone can talk. And so whenever they talk about the COVID stuff, whack jobs just show up, and it's like a whole people are like, why are you arguing with the whack jobs? You're not gonna. But so it's a whole. There are definitely a higher percentage of whack jobs going to punk rock bowling than there are Fest. Also, yeah. I would say that if you could scan someone's brain and see what their true beliefs are, I certainly would agree that the Fest crowd is much more generally liberal and further left. Whereas the punk rock bowling crowd, you got some left people, but you also have some people that say, I hate politics, I don't like politics, when really that just means they're like super conservative, you know? And not
yeah,
even,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like really shit, you know, shit people. And I'm not saying shit if you're conservative, but like people with dark thoughts that live in a dark world, you know what I mean? I got some friends like that, and it's getting worse, and it's a real bummer. Anyways, let me think of an example. Well, all right, I'll mention this guy just because I think he doesn't care about being mentioned. The Fest crowd loves to go after Black Dahlia. You know, they say, you know, how dare Black Dahlia have naked women on his album covers? How dare Black Dahlia have songs like Dairy Queen? Meanwhile, Black Dahlia always pays people, you know, if he uses their service or whatever, he pays all his recording people. He pays all his cover models. No one's ever actually said anything bad about him. People have only attacked his art, not him, because he's never done anything actually that bad, you know. I mean, he's gotten the fist fights and stuff, but that's different. Like, you know, he's never really screwed anybody over. He's never welched out on payments. I've seen women throw themselves at Black Dahlia. That's no bullshit. I've been to many concerts. Women throw themselves at him, and that's true. Not a single woman ever said a bad thing about Black Dahlia. But all the Fest crowd, you know, they're like, oh, Black Dahlia, you know, he's chauvinistic. He objectifies women. He's a bad guy. Meanwhile, I can name any number of pop punk dudes that have been, you know, whipping their weenies out when they're not supposed to, you know, gone further than when the girl asked them to. So the point being is, I feel as though the Fest people exact vengeance against Black Dahlia, and this is generally, not all of them, this is very general, you know, exact vengeance against Black Dahlia to make them say, I'm proper, I'm right. And I can name people, I'm not going to, I can name people that I know in the punk scene that said, you know, Black Dahlia, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, I know your ex-girlfriend, you treated her like shit. I know your other ex-girlfriend, you treated her like shit. Meanwhile, you're up there all the time saying, I'm Mr. Just, I'm Mr. Righteous, you know, white men are the worst. Meanwhile, you are a worse white man. I know what you've done, you know, and I don't see that. I don't see Dwarves fans doing that. I don't see DFL fans doing that. I don't see Melvins fans doing that. You see what I'm saying? That's my anti-Fest crowd stance, which is generalized, not every single person, but those people in that pop punk world, that Planet X world, that No Idea world, they all have that passive-aggressive energy. Right? Not all, many of them, more than average, I would say.
I mean, we're learning that every scene has those people. I mean, that's what we've spent the last 2 years, 3 years learning, right? Is that there's no scene that's untouched by
sure
by rampant sexism and abuse of power. And, you know, I think it's hilarious that you're like, yeah, this is a little generalized and it's not every single person. Like, it's very generalized. Of course, it's not every single person. You're talking about like a handful of people.
But I would argue,
as opposed to an entire festival full of people. Also, we're talking about the fans, not just the bands. We're talking about
No, go ahead. I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, I was pretty much done. Yeah, go ahead.
I would argue that the percentage of people that have this passive-aggressive faux righteousness is higher at Fest than other punk festivals or other festivals in general.
I see.
And
so,
I would argue.
So that you're saying they're misbehaving at the same rate as everyone else, but they're more righteous.
I'm saying they're misbehaving at a greater rate, frankly. In
no,
general.
Come on.
Definitely.
No, I'm sorry. I disagree with that. I totally disagree with that.
Very good. You may. I don't know if there's a scientific.
Thank you.
I don't know if there's a way we can quanta. All I'm saying is I've had way more shittier experiences with Fest type people than non-Fest type people. I sense more passive aggressiveness, more phoniness, more deceit, more I'm such a great person, but in reality I do shitty things. I see that at a way higher rate at Fest than other places, you know.
I just feel like you have to have had like a few bands that just soured. I mean, I'm just telling you, as someone that goes to Fest and is friends with so many of those bands and so many of those people, I like just don't actually recognize what you're saying. Well, you know what I mean? I feel like you, I am wondering if you've just had like a super craptastic experience with like a handful of bands. And I agree with you. Like it is when there's hypocrisy involved in bad behavior or when people have been behaving badly and meanwhile they've been like putting on quite a show as to like being righteous, then I understand where you would have extra venom towards those people when it turns out that they are behaving badly. I get that part of it.
I will concede that it is possible that my perspective is not shaded. What's the word? Skewed. Through personal interactions. But I don't have a scientific way to test that, but I will get to work trying to figure it out, and we will get to the bottom of this once and all. Who is more moral, the punk rock bowling crowd or the Fest crowd?
Em, would you attend a festival at this point? And if you really wanted to go to a festival, like what would you be hoping their COVID policy would be?
I don't know if I go to a festival at this point because I want, like, I haven't been to a proper festival, so I want to, like, do the whole thing, you know? I want to have, the full experience and not have to worry about, like, oh, is this person next to me? Like, could they possibly get me sick? And then could I spread that to my family? And then I'm, like, patient zero, you know what I mean? The downfall of everything. So I think that the stress would be too much.
So, wait, are you saying you don't feel like you have never, like, you have never in life attended a proper festival?
No.
Oh, like, my gosh, that's so crazy and cool. I want to go with you to your first festival.
I'd love to go, like, there's so many that it's, like, I need to go at least once in my life to, like, Rebellion and Punk Rock Bowling. Like, Fest does look kind of cool and, you know, like, all this kind of stuff. When I was in grade 9, so I would have been 14 or about there. My friend was like, oh, yes, my dad has, works at this place and he can get passes for Riot Fest, and Riot Fest was going to be in Toronto, and I don't remember the lineup, but I remember like it was really good and I was really excited, and he was like, oh, I can get us tickets, like, you know, like this is our kind of music, I can get us tickets, and I never heard from him again.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, and I was like, thanks. So that's the closest I've gotten. I think I'd probably be more comfortable if it was outdoors, and I like what Fest is doing with, like, yes, show us your proof of vaccination, but you don't have to put it in an app. You can just show us it and make sure, you know, you're the person you say you are. And, like, testing for everyone. I think that's smart because, you know, you can be vaccinated and still be sick. And I think it's a good measure to take. And I think more places will adopt that to be like, okay, if you're vaccinated, great, show us the thing. Also show us that you're negative, you're good to come in. So I think they're doing the right thing that way. For sure.
Yeah, go fast.
So with festivals and concerts in general, have you guys ever impersonated someone to get into a show?
No, but I really like your segue.
Thank you.
Has someone else done an impersonation to try to get into a festival, Emmore?
Unfortunately, I haven't. I don't have any good stories that way for like personally. But there is a guy who impersonated Jonathan Richman, who is 70 years old. Not the person who impersonated him, but he could be. But Jonathan Richman is 70 years old.
I thought Jonathan Richman was 70. I thought he was like 55.
So did I. I looked it up today, and I was like, I have to work that in somehow. But no, he's 70.
Dang.
So, yeah, someone impersonating Jonathan Richman called the Love Olay Summer Festival, which is an annual music festival run by the Olympia Film Society in Olympia. And the scammer called in. Saying that he was the real, or that Richman wanted to play, and then he was Richman, and the festival booked him and didn't check anything, and just like, yep, this is fine, this is all well and good. And it was revealed as a scam when a DJ reached out to the real Jonathan Richman and his team requesting a promotional interview, and Richman was like, was surprised at the, you know, oh, I'm not supposed to be playing a show, what's going on? And then everything unraveled from there. The scammer has not been caught. On the Love Olay Summer Fest website, they say that event organizers were the target of an elaborate booking scam. And they also ran the real Jonathan Richman statement, which reads, "Hello, everyone. This is the real Jonathan Richman. I just heard of your wonderful festival and sounds like an ideal place for me to play someday. No hard feelings on my part and no apologies necessary from the wonderful people who have invited me and Tommy to play so many times before. Did the guy who called you up manage to impersonate my voice pretty good? Because if he did, you've got to hand it to him. Most people can't do it. But seriously, just for a second, I am sad for any disappointments and expenses caused to the Film Society and the fine people of Olympia. Of course, I will come back to play for the Olympians." What did this scammer have to gain from impersonating Jonathan Richman to get on to a festival that seems like it's free? Why would you do this? John, why would someone do this?
Because you're a drug addict that needs money. That's why. I think this is just pure speculation. I really don't know. But, I mean, the scam is bound to fail, right? In that it's going to get found out as a scam unless Jonathan Richman walks on stage, which he's not going to do. So it's these kind of scams are usually drug addicts if they're in the States. And so he just needs money. He needs money quick, or maybe he owes money to the mob. He needs money quick, so he calls up the festival and says, "Oh, give me 10 grand down now and 10 grand at the festival." They wire him 10 grand. And that's the tricky part. It's getting them to wire 10 grand to an account that can't be traced. And usually it can be traced, and that's usually how they get caught. And unless this guy's totally whacked out and it's like just some weird like joke that Jonathan Richman isn't playing. And so that's what my guess is. It's a drug addict or someone with, you know, problems that needs money super quick, and that's how they figured out how to do it. And the scam's not going to work.
Hallie, what do you think?
I mean, I feel bad for like the festival. It's disappointing, and I couldn't find any stories that mentioned whether like actual money had changed hands.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, I feel bad for the festival, but also isn't this like kind of hilarious?
Yeah.
I love that someone's get rich quick scheme was like they're gonna pretend to be Jonathan Richman of the Modern Lovers and try to get booked in a festival. Like this, it's just I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't laugh. I just
it's funny.
There's something really funny about this to me. Just like, yeah. But it's also kind of hilarious.
Of all the people, it's like, who could – see, that's what makes it – like, if you were like, this is Elton John, they'd be like, really? like this is Jonathan Richman. Oh, yeah, it's Jonathan Richman. You know what I mean? It's like, it's unexpected, you know?
Yes.
the key to a scam is not – don't shoot too high. Shoot relatively low, you know?
And like, is the person like a big Modern Lovers fan? Like, I feel like they have to be, otherwise, like, do they even know that this festival would want Jonathan Richman to play? I just like the whole thing is like sort of elaborate in a way that's like very, it's like elaborate and specific in a way that's like very entertaining to me.
What if it's like a Jonathan Winters main? I'm not Jonathan Winters. Jonathan Richman. That like he actually thinks he's Jonathan Richman and like he really wants it to happen, and then you know what I mean, like what if some guy did show, they should have played along and just see who showed up is what they should have done.
Yeah, like what if he had like an act prepared?
Oh, that would have been perfect. They would have got so much more traffic.
Like, you know how like if someone's pet gets stolen, they're like, you know, no questions asked, just return the pet and that's fine. You know, we all want to know the bottom of this mystery. So they'd be like, listen, man, no problem. Just show up at the festival and we'll see what happens.
You know? Yeah, like you have to provide us with some sort of entertainment now.
I will say when a similar thing happened with Bruce Springsteen, I don't know if the listeners remember, a few years ago there was a guy that like hung around the Black Crowes and President of the United States of America, and he had a couple of records, and he said he was scheduling some kind of benefit festival with Bruce Springsteen, and it turned out that he got all this money, like Bruce Springsteen was going to be there and Patti Smith and this guy, blah blah blah, and then of course it all fell apart, and what was the reason? The guy had a severe drug problem, you know, so.
I want them to release the phone call audio, though. I want to hear, like, his impression.
What if it was Jonathan Richman and he just decided he didn't want to play anymore? That wasn't me.
Oh, I want that to be the case now. Oh, that would be perfect.
Hallie Bullock, would it have been too much of an ask for Jonathan Richman to say, you know what, I'm going to be the ultimate trooper, and I'm going to come out and just do a solo set and be there anyways?
I wonder if without COVID, if that's maybe what he might have done, you know?
Yeah.
True. Seems like a cool guy.
I saw him live once.
Last minute plans like that are like a little bit hard to pull off now, you know? True. You don't know his comfort level with travel and that kind of thing.
To be fair, those are the things legends are made of, though, to be fair.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah.
Was he good live?
It was exactly what you would think it would be. Jonathan Richman is a great artist. He's a little weird, a little quirky. Not super weird and super quirky, but a little weird and super quirky. It's him and that drummer Tommy. I forget the guy's last name. And they do Modern Lovers and Jonathan Richman songs, which are you know power pop ish, folk ish, funny songs, and that's what he does. And it's cool.
I'd like to see him live one day.
You should.
Yeah. Maybe he'll play next year at this festival.
I would like that to be the end of this story.
So now we're turning to a story about a band that influenced Jonathan Richman, and he lived on their manager's couch for a while when he moved to New York City in 1969. We're talking about the Velvet Underground, who have a documentary coming up called The Velvet Underground, and it was directed by Todd Haynes. So he's directed other movies about music. Like, he directed Velvet Goldmine, which is about glam rock, and Superstar, the Karen Carpenter story, and I'm Not There, which is about Bob Dylan. None of those are documentaries, they're just movies about music. So this is his first documentary.
this documentary will be out in theaters and streaming on Apple TV Plus on October 15th, and a soundtrack curated by him and music supervisor Randall Poster will also be released on October 15th, and it's supposed to have lots of a mix of classics and rarities from the Velvet Underground. So it features a lot of our archival footage. There's a lot, it looks like there's going to be a lot of like Andy Warhol footage, and interviews with John Cale, Mo Tucker, a bunch of other cool people. Are you guys big Velvet Underground fans? Does this look good, and are you excited?
John.
I'm a big Velvet Underground fan. I've got, I mean, there are so many different versions of the Velvet Underground albums these days, like the two-disc version, the four-disc version. Everyone should definitely get, like, of the classic albums, the two-disc versions at least. I mean, the four is a lot, you know, but the two, because they actually had a lot of unreleased songs, not recordings, songs, and those are on those double discs, and they are great. I'm a big Velvet Underground fan. I'm also a big Lou Reed fan. You know, Transformer, the album everybody loves, but also some of his 80s stuff is pretty good too. Like, I call the album the video games album. It's called My Red Joystick, I think, is the album. But I will say, I'm going to pause that to say Jonathan Richman also runs a business, Arcane Masonry in Chico, making pizza ovens. FYI. Getting back to Velvet Underground.
So you should send free pizzas to everyone at that.
You should.
Yeah, he can cater.
So anyway, getting back to the Velvet Underground. This is cool. I will check this out. Just by going off the clip, I feel it will be somewhat of a hagiography, unlike Architects of Destruction, the oral history of Leftover Crack, which shows all sides of the band. And honestly, like, here's the thing, like I'm gonna be kind of devil's advocate here. I do agree with this. Velvet Underground are an amazing band. Lou Reed, an amazing artist. Although I will say Velvet Underground, Maureen Tucker, Lou Reed, the Welsh guy who I'm a huge fan of, I can't remember his name, John Cale, you know, amazing trio, and their music is the best. Lou Reed's got some really cool solo stuff, but not as good as Velvet Underground, even though Lou Reed actually – I was surprised. Lou Reed actually wrote most of the Velvet Underground tracks, which I didn't realize, frankly. The point being is – Lou Reed was a total asshole. Like, he really was. Like, he totally – like there's this one story where, like, he walks into, like, some restaurant and he says, is the soup brown and lumpy? And the guy goes, no. And then Lou Reed goes, don't you fucking forget it. And it's like Lou, you're an asshole. And I don't mind that Lou Reed's an asshole. Like, I mean, like, honestly, if he was an asshole to me, I think I'd feel differently. Actually, the point being is Lou Reed has a huge chip on his shoulder. And people are like, Lou Reed, man, he created indie rock. Giddy, like, is the Velvet Underground, they're a revolutionary band, but are they as revolutionary as people think they are, or are they just a little bit less revolutionary than people think they are? Like, I'm Waiting for the Man, amazing track, but isn't that really just Lou Reed and a riff singing I'm Waiting for the Man, I Got $15 in My Hand? Like, is that really that mind-blowing? There's lots of songs about drugs before that, you know, and there's also lots of songs about drugs after that, including Crack Rock Steady by Choking Victim, the band that would come left over Crack, who starred in the book. No, I'm good. The point being is, I love the Velvet Underground. I'm not dissing the Velvet Underground. I think Lou Reed is an incredibly complex guy. And also, if you read Please Kill Me, you read about some of the stuff he gets up into. You know, Lou Reed, you're a little too cocky considering the stuff that you get up. You know what I mean? Like the amount of whining that you do, you know. I get that he's a fractured genius or whatever, but it's like, you know what, Lou? Like, you're cool, you're amazing, but I don't think you're the most amazing. The point being is, I feel as though, much like the Beatles to a degree, but over the past few years, the Beatles have taken – people have taken some more realistic looks at the Beatles, you know. I feel as though the Velvet Underground could deal with a realistic look at the band. And honestly, like a lot of artists and a lot of bands are scared to do that. Like, they don't want, like a true look. They want rah-rah, they're the best, they did it all. But when you do a true look at the band, you don't lose any fans. And honestly, I think you gain fans, frankly. You know, and I'm going to be a total dick here. Architects of Destruction, and I'm not going to mention again this episode. Architects of Destruction, or rather brutal towards Leftover Crack in some parts. The fans loved it. Not a single person said, I'm not a fan anymore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't think it hurts you. I really don't. Hallie Blitt, your perspective.
I'm like super excited about this. I feel like I, you know, like the Velvet Underground songs that I like, I love, I do feel like they were just as influential as people say they were. I feel like John actually just sounds like, you know, like way more of the history than I do. And that's like why I feel like this documentary is maybe for people like me, like people who really love the music, but actually like haven't done the deep dive on like, I don't know. Yeah. Just like all this archival footage, all like, I think this is like built for me because I'm so interested to know more. And I think Todd Haynes is the guy to do it because, like Em said, this is a guy who most of his filmmaking career has in some way also involved music or wanting to express something specific about a music scene that he's into. I mean, he's directed videos for Sonic Youth. He, and that Karen Carpenter movie that you mentioned, I was like reading a little bit more about that today. That was like the first short film that he did that made like the festival circuit. And it was like, did you read this too? He like told the story of Karen Carpenter, but he used like dolls and stuff. It's like, sounds really out there. And then he got sued because he didn't have permission to use the music. So apparently it's become like this real collector's item. If you can get a hold of one of the few copies of this like film that he made. But I just think like, he's just an interesting guy. He's also like a filmmaker who's super, super into the art scene, which like the Velvet Underground, just, you know, it's like you can't even separate their career from, you know, their involvement in and what was happening in the art scene at the time. So I think this is going to be really cool. And I'm like super excited for it. And what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. With the Barbie dolls too, I'm pretty sure there's a sequence in the Velvet Underground the Velvet Goldmine movie, where like, they're not like transformed, but it's a sequence where the two of the characters are Barbie dolls doing something. And I think it was to get around, the censors.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's like it's in a lot of his stuff. So maybe there'll be like, you know, a Barbie Lou Reed or something. Like that would be really cool. I'm excited for this. I think it's going to be really good. Kind of same thing. Like I don't know a lot about them. Like I know more about Lou Reed than about like the Velvet Underground as a whole. And there's always that point, you know, when you're reading like a book that was written or takes place in New York around that time, there's always the, I had a run-in with like Andy Warhol, or I saw Lou Reed sitting around, or you know what I mean? Like there's always something like that. So it's really interesting because you have like so many different people's perspectives on them and stuff. So it's interesting to see how people view them and what they hide and what they don't, like John, like what you were saying, like how they're going to present them. But no, I think it looks really cool. I really hope they expand it, like add it to Netflix or something, because Apple TV Plus is don't have it. So get on all the streaming services, you'll make more money that way. But yeah. So who wants to play a song first?
Go ahead, Hallie. Give it a kick.
Oh wait, no, I didn't do a good job. I meant to write it down and I forgot to write it down, so now I have to look it up. John, do you know what you're playing?
Well, I'm gonna play mine at the end. Emma, what do you got?
All right. So it's been a very frustrating week. And I think that something just nice and sort of light, but not light at the same time. So I'm going with Take Up Space by Dream Nails. This is their first single with their new singer, and it's surfy, and it's fun, and it's good. So this is Take Up Space by Dream Nails. Take up space. I don't wanna stay at home with you. We're back. So that was Take Up Space by Dream Eels.
And I looked up my songs. So the next time you throw to me, I won't just be like a doofus. Be like, oh, I don't know. All right. What else is going on in the news here?
Okay. So Punk Rock Bowling has announced some replacements. Ray Ellis will be replaced with The Dwarves. The Lawrence Arms will be replaced with Dillinger 4. And Bishop's Green will be replaced with MDC. So they're being replaced due to a mixture of travel issues and health concerns. John, you're going to Punk Rock Bowling. What do you think of these changes?
2 out of 3 ain't bad. I'm thrilled that Dwarves are playing the main stage. They weren't even playing at all before. Now they're going to be on the main stage. And listen, all the other bands playing need to watch out, because I saw Dwarves play Punk Rock Bowling at Asbury Park. Dwarves won Punk Rock Bowling. They just destroyed. They did 2 sets right in a row. The first set was Young and Good Looking straight through. Then they did about 12 other hardcore tracks. And like, they were tight, focused. And like most of the bands at that Punk Rock Bowling were, you know, like, let's have some fun. We're punk. Yay. And the Dwarves just came out and just like destroyed, like no mercy, no talking. No, they walked out. Were the Dwarves the best rock? No. What's the phrase? Great rock legends, the Dwarves. And then they didn't say anything else. 24 songs right in a row. No breaks. Bang, 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 bang. It was without question. I'm going to be a dick. The only band that came close, and maybe they tied them, was Leftover Crack, because Leftover Crack was amazing, because they came out and were kind of in shambles, where all the other bands were like tight and sharp and, you know, poppy. Leftover Crack was in shambles. They opened up with a messed up version of Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark. And they were literally the only crust, and obviously they're not a crust band, fine, whatever, but they were the only crust-ish band there. They were the only band that had harsh noise at Punk Rock Bowling, which was cool. MDC, I'm psyched they're getting the main stage. I haven't seen MDC in about 10 years. Some other time I'll talk about how I was involved in a literal riot at an MDC show, but we're running a little long, so I won't do that tonight. And the other one, Dillinger 4. Everyone loves Dillinger 4, and I'm happy for them.
I don't have anything interesting to say about this. Do you?
Okay. Not really. I think they'd be all three of them would have their merits. You know, I think go to see who you want to see, and whoever you miss, someone else will see them and get a lot out of them. So, on to something that I got a lot out of is the next story, which is Me Rex, which is a band that's made up of Miles McCabe and Catherine Woods of Fresh and Phoebe Cross and Rich Mandel of Happy Accidents. Excuse me. Phoebe Cross is also in Cheerleaders with Catherine, so like there's a lot of bands going on. So they have released a video for their single Galena. So it's not one song. It's made up of 5 separate short songs: Radon, Applewhite, Iron Sulfide, Lead, Wandel, and Burnt Oak. So it flows together very well, and it feels like it's just one full song that flows together. So these songs are off of their album called Mega Bear. Mega Bear has 52 songs in total. They're all short, ranging from about 30 seconds to, I think, a minute, and Mega Bear is meant to be listened on shuffle, so it's like there's infinite possibilities for song combinations and how they'll all gel really well. And it's kind of this idea that you hit play and then the story will find you, it will come to you, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's really interesting that way. So the video that is paired with it is somebody like shuffling like a deck of cards, and they're kind of like, they look like tarot cards, and it's kind of an advertisement, which I didn't realize until later, but the cards are like Mega Bear branded. So each card is representative of a song, which is it's a cool tie and it's kind of neat. But anyways, it's a really neat idea. And did you think the song flowed well, even though it was separate songs, and did you try mixing up the album?
I love this concept. I love that they did it. I don't think it ultimately makes for the best songs. Like, I like a song where you hear the chorus a couple of times. I think the songwriting structure is the way it is for a reason, because there's just something really pleasing about it, to hear your ear really enjoys hearing something again. You latch onto the hook. I love that they did this. I think a lot of the snippets are great. I think it as an experiment, I think it's just so interesting. And I like that this band is just pushing themselves and thinking outside the box. As a song, I thought that this sounded like what it is, which is just sort of some pieces sort of flowing in and out of each other in a way that I did like. It just, because it never was coming back to like a grounding chorus or some sort of core idea, it felt very just sort of meandery to me, which it's not, that's not even really a criticism, because that obviously is what they were aiming to do. It's just that's not going to be the kind of song structure that's going to grab me in the way that my favorite songs do. But it's all, the melodies are pretty, it's really well recorded. I really like what they're doing, and I was kind of obsessed with this video. So the video is, I'm saying, it's just, you see this person's hands, they're clearly a magician. They're someone that knows how to do sleight of hand stuff with cards. And so while these aren't traditional playing cards, they are doing card tricks, and you do start to lock into how impressive some of these card tricks are, because they're, again, it's just all sleight of hand stuff. And I found this video really meditatively pleasing. I could see myself returning to this video again when I'm stressed out by the news or just feeling everything's terrible. This video, the song has just something hopeful about it, and the video, just to watch these hands and see all these clever little tricks, and also the cards are just beautiful to look at. I found that very satisfying. I was just so into just the whole, they put a lot of pieces, literally pieces of a few different songs into this. The video is a piece of it, the art direction, the illustration of the cards, the person there's just so many pleasing little pieces to this that I loved the whole. I just absolutely loved it. John, did you like this?
I like how they have it sort of reminded me of the Flaming. Remember when the Flaming Lips had that album Zurika, which was four CDs at once, and you could play three if you wanted, you could play two, you could play one, and it would the idea was to make different sounds. I don't know if anybody actually did line up four boomboxes and do that, and even if they did, they probably once, but I like how they're playing with medium. I think that's pretty cool. I also like the video with the cards. I don't know if there's ever been a card trick video before. I mean, honestly, it is kind of hard to come up. Most videos are band standing there playing, having a good time. A band with, lots of good looking women standing around them, band walking around in a field looking sad. So it is kind of tough to do a video that has never been done before. I don't think a card trick video has been done before, and I think that's cool and is interesting. I like many M-War bands. This was not one of my favorite M-War bands.
Well, this isn't even my favorite of their bands. I like Mirex, but I would say I prefer Fresh. I like some of the other projects that some of these musicians do a little bit better than Mirex. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah. But I hear you, John, where I could see where this wouldn't be this wouldn't be the thing that would just knock you out of your seat musically.
Fair enough.
But yes. Did you expressed all the love you needed to express for this?
At the end, I just have I want to throw the shittygirlbands.org commenter off a cliff.
Oh yeah, that yeah. guy.
So it's like listen to don't, stuff.
Don't let that get to you. I mean, like check this out. Like this dude is a dude that sees a band with a woman in it, and he says shitty girl band. Like, what does that mean? That like any band with a girl on it, or a woman rather, or a girl, he doesn't like you know what I mean? Like it's not as if we only post about women, because honestly we still post way more about dudes than girls, you know. And so that upsets him to see a single woman in a band anywhere. So don't let it get to you, because I mean, if anything, it just goes to show like what a shitty little person he is that upsets him. You know what I mean? You know, like it's weird that he's so dedicated to it. And also it's weird that like from any perspective, he doesn't want to see women in the arts. Like from any perspective, that's a weird, the only view is if you were a true misogynist, you know, but like we said, why do they love, you know, cute girl that does folksy songs, but they hate surfboard? It's because Danny Miller's not going to be their girlfriend. Same thing here. This is a guy that can't get girls, and I feel bad for him in that context, but he can't get girls. So, and honestly, it's because he's got a shitty personality, and so he takes it out on all women. So don't let that get to you. Honestly, the more this guy posts, it means the more you're winning, frankly, and that's the truth.
Yeah. His discomfort gives me power.
That's the idea. I mean, for real. The weird thing is, like these guys complain all the time, but they never go away. You know what I mean? Like there's some websites I read less than I used to, but these guys still hang around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the drunk at the bar that hates everyone at the bar. It's like, well, why don't you go, Bill? I got nowhere else to go. You know what I mean? Like that's what it is.
Am I spacing out? Are there even female vocals on this track?
I think Catherine Woods does like backing.
Yeah, like it's so not, no. Just, where are you getting girl band from? Like it just makes me feel like that person didn't even listen to the song. Like they literally just saw the picture like shitty girl band.
If a girl did mail order for a band, the guy would call him a shitty girl band. You know what I mean? Like
really nuts, man. That's really annoying.
And honestly, like I said, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, like if you said to me, maybe we should nuke the comment section, I'd be like, go to hell, you know, even if it's not a cool place, it's still important to have. But anymore, it's like mostly shitheads. Not everybody, but a lot of shitheads. You know what I mean? So I was like, what's the point of it anymore? You know?
Yeah.
The vermin won, I guess. So, you know what happens? you know what happens when you got too many rats in the basement?
There's still the odd good discussion.
That's true. Yeah, and so I don't want to punish that guy or that girl for the 70% shitheads. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't want a listener, like if a listener has a comment, John, no, I mean, honestly, like, you know if you're cool or not in the comment section. And if you're cool, I'm not annoyed by you. But we do have a lot of dirtbags down there, you know.
Yeah, good people. We love you. Keep commenting.
Yeah. Push out the bad, you know. Kill the bad with vibe, but it never seems to work that way. Like idiots and jerks always seem to have more willpower when it comes to ruining a good time than nice people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think I probably, you know, I just generally don't internet comment because I don't know why. I feel like I don't have to, first of all, I just don't have that time, kind of time on my hands to be an internet commenter.
True that.
But also you just, because there are so many trolls, you just feel like, oh God, by just saying anything, am I somehow going to get like the eye of Sauron, like pointing at me, you know, like, am I just like inviting some kind of like criticism or snarkiness? Is like, you know, I think a lot of people just can't be bothered, you know, if they're positive people.
Yeah. I agree. Right. Yeah.
Now on to Steve Jones and Paul Cook. They've won their legal suit against John Lydon. And they're all of the Sex Pistols. So John Lydon wanted to prevent Sex Pistols compositions and recordings from being used in the upcoming Danny Boyle directed biopic Pistol, which is based on
Steve Jones' memoir, Lonely Boy. So a UK High Court judge ruled that Jones and Cook were entitled to invoke the majority voting rules against Lydon in relation to the use of Sex Pistols material in the series under the terms of a band member agreement that was made in or that was signed in 1998. Today or yesterday, John Lydon released a press statement on his website. The majority of which was written by his legal team and ends with a statement of his own, which reads in part, "I am the lead singer and songwriter, frontman, image, the lot, you name it. I put it there. How is that not relevant? It's dumbfounding to me. It is so destructive to what the band is, and so I fear that the whole project might be extremely negative. How can anyone think that this can proceed without consulting me and deal with my personal life in this and my issues in this without any meaningful contact with me before the project is announced to the world? I don't think there are even words that I can put forward to explain quite how disingenuous this is." So he's concerned too about how he's going to be portrayed. I've read Lonely Boy, and I read it a while ago, but I don't remember him being painted in an unflattering, like a needlessly unflattering light. Or anything, so I don't really see what he is worried about. And does this dispute add to the Sex Pistols image, or does it damage it? And why is Mr. Butter commercial up on his high horse for this? Because it seems like a good thing, like more people would discover the band and the band's music, and it's not like the music has been kept out of, you know, the public eye in advertising and things.
This kind of throws back to what we were talking about before, is I don't hate Lydon. I was disappointed by his Trump comments for sure. And so people say, oh, you know, Lydon's a dick, Lydon's a shitty person. Well, is he? I mean, maybe he is. But, I mean, he's caring for his wife that has Alzheimer's. He's caring for his brother that has Alzheimer's. Like that kind of shows that he's kind of an all right dude. To a lot of people just throw him in the nursing home or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he canceled an entire pill tour. When Ari Up passed away, he canceled an entire pill tour and said, listen, I'm staying home with my wife. Too bad, you know, for you and for me, really. I don't hate John Lydon. I don't think he's a big demon that he's been made out to be. I think he's chosen his words in the past couple of years poorly. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's a bad person. If anything, a lot of his actions show he's a good person. He adopted Ari Up's kids. And the first thing he said is, you know, they've never had real education. They don't even know how to write. I need to get them educated in how to write and all that kind of stuff, which I is commendable. He donated to he took the money from the butter commercial and like donated to some ape habitat and like saved a bunch of apes or something. So I can't demonize him, and I sort of feel his perspective here, and that this is it's being portrayed as a Sex Pistols story, and he's not being consulted. He's not a part of it, and so he's going to be portrayed as someone who he's not, hypothetically speaking, which can be extremely frustrating, and maybe they're going to paint him as a prick, you know? People do believe that kind of stuff. Like, people believe documentaries, even though – like film documentaries, even though it's clear they're not totally accurate, and they're written so they're not accurate for the sake of story. Real life doesn't follow the beats of a story, but films do, you know? But do I feel as though he's fighting this because that's his main concern, or does he really just want to get back at Steve Jones? I actually feel it's probably the latter. I feel he's just taking his anger out on Steve Jones and sort of using this as a mask or whatever. Although Lonely Planet Boy really doesn't talk bad about Lydon much at all, frankly. So the point being is, I understand where Lydon's coming from. I understand where Steve Jones is coming from. And not every conflict has a good side and a bad side. I think it's kind of maybe two relatively good sides here that have a disagreement, and there's no real answer, you know. And I think Lydon's probably being stubborn and difficult, but that's who he is, and that's not surprising, you know. And I can feel it, like his story is being told by someone else without any of his input, which can be frustrating, you know. And like you said, I wrote all the lyrics, which he probably did write most of the lyrics, and those are being used in a film that he has no control over, which can be frustrating, you know. So I have sympathy for him. I'm not saying he's right, but I empathize with his frustration. Hallie Bullitt.
I mean, I think people are disgusted with him because when he is like supporting Trump, I think people feel that it's a real betrayal of the, you know, the mission statement of the Sex Pistols, you know,
yeah.
Which, you know, I think people feel like it's a real betrayal of the values that he set up as being his own when he was writing that music. So I don't know. I think I see why people just, you know, I see why people have turned their back on him for sure. I mean, I was with, this sort of just seemed really sour grapes to me. I was like, oh, is he just like bitter that they're not like basing it on like his autobiography? Are they like, you know, like what should it matter to him? And like, and I hadn't read Lonely Boy, and I'm really interested to hear that you guys say that it doesn't portray him in a negative light, because I think that's what I'd been thinking. I was like, oh, well, he must just come off as a jerk in this book or something, and that's why he doesn't want this to be like the story that's told. But if that's not even the case, then I was thinking like it just sort of seems sour grapes. But then I don't know, then, and when you read his statement, I was like, that, I don't know. I gained a little more sympathy for his perspective. It would be weird if someone decided to do an Unlovables TV series, and I was like not consulted about it at all when I was like the singer and songwriter. It would feel very strange to me. Like, I don't know that I would like sue about it, but I it's like, I don't know, reading his personal statement, I suddenly saw his perspective a little bit more. But in general, it just sort of seems like it seems kind of like he's just a contentious person, right?
I agree 100% with that statement. How, what if there's like an Unlovables documentary and like you're not consulted and like you're like a total asshole the whole thing? It's like, I would have to have you and the Unlovables, but Hallie, we always said we were going to be a team. Not anymore. People come to see me, and you better shake up.
I mean, I would not want there to be an Unlovables documentary, really, because if, like, you know, I don't know, you just, that's a whole other thing. There's not going to be an Unlovables documentary, so I'm not going to get myself too worked up about it.
What if they read it, that famous David Ruffin and the Temptations documentary, and they just change it to the Unlovables and change the names, and you do that famous speech, like when you're telling the other Temptations that it's going to be Hallie Bullitt and the Unlovables, you know, yeah, that's the sound of that. Hallie Bullitt and the Unlovables.
Can you please edit this movie spoof that you've now conceived of? yeah, I don't know. Johnny Rotten, I mean, right? He's like, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Johnny. He's doing some good, I mean, he's doing some good things in his life, but he's definitely just become kind of like he's just a shady guy, right? Just
like, I don't even know that he's shady. Kind
of crazy
I don't agree with the Trump stance at all. I don't know that he's shady. I think he used to have a exacto knife skill at picking things apart and looking at angles that people hadn't considered and stabbing at groupthink. I think because of the years and also because of drinking, which he's talked about, his tool has become much duller, you know, yeah. And he's not able to do that. Like, I remember when he was wearing a Trump shirt, I thought that was actually kind of funny. Like, I thought he was making the argument that the Trump shirt used to be the same as the swastika shirt they used to wear, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. He just liked Trump, you know. It's like,
well, no, he just like actually liked yeah. Trump. It's like so horrifying.
Yeah. So that, you know, people are comp, you know, like, has he done anything? You could argue that him supporting Trump is doing something shitty, but if we don't, and I don't necessarily disagree with that argument, if we put that aside, him saying shitty things, but doing good things is more important than saying good things and doing shitty things. And I think that's where the punk community gets confused a lot. But I'm not saying that necessarily is lied. And, you know, because, you know, if we just didn't have the Trump thing, I would be so behind Lydon. Like I would be like, screw you. Lydon's the greatest. You all don't get it. He's real punk. The Trump thing, you just can't square that. You can't, you know.
No way. Yeah.
Like, I even can support the butter. You know what I mean? I can make a solid argument for the butter. Like, the Trump, like, oh, one step too far, you know?
I mean, the butter's, like, a little embarrassing, but it's not, I don't have, like, a problem with it.
I think it's kind of funny. Like his argument was, it's English, it's an English product made in England. I'm an English product, why wouldn't I support it? And I agree. And he did use that money to save the lives of apes. So, you know, I say, that's fine with me.
I didn't know the apes thing. That puts it in a much better light. Now.
And then even in the recent thing where it was like him, Henry Rollins, and Marky Ramone, he wasn't as sharp. Like, he was just destroying the thing. And frankly, I wish he was sharper. But even then, I'm like, yes, John Lydon, the Destroyer. Like, everyone's like, punk is great. We're here to have fun and reminisce about the 70s. And John Lydon is like attacking Marky Ramone. And he just won't let up. He's just like, he's ruining it. He's ruining it. And I'm loving it. I'm like, yes, John Lydon's the greatest. And then the Trump thing. And like, ah, you know.
I mean, he's always been a, like, you know, he really always has been a contrarian and a troublemaker. So I guess he's continued that for his whole life. He's just fully committed to that.
Sigh.
So now we'll move on to a bit of a lighter story, but it's also a literal shit show. So somebody took a dump in the middle of a turnstile circle pit. This happened on August 30th at VFW Hall in Santa Cruz. And so fans noticed that someone had dropped a deuce in the middle of the circle pit. Worse, because the rogue turd was unnoticed for some time. Some unfortunate person stepped in it and then stage dived, thereby transferring the crap to the stage and then back out into the audience. The pooper has not been caught or identified at this time. And the story on Punk News ends with, stay safe out there. So, who wants to kick this off?
I will. I have many. Oh, go ahead, Hallie. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to laugh about the pooper.
I have many thoughts on this. First of all, in of itself, it's gross, but it's extremely funny. Like, I'm imagining, like, some guy's in the circle pit, and he's like, I gotta take a dump. So, like, he's squatting and circle pitting and just dropping a deuce while he, like, goes in the circle pit. That's what's happening in my – that's probably not what happened in real life, you know. But I mean, that's totally gross. And just – I don't know. I you know, like, lowbrow, and I never, like, gross out humor. But this is just, like, so bizarre and weird and creepy. It's funny. That being said, some people are like, well, what if someone had a medical problem or IBS or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, you know, sometimes accidents happen. But on the other hand, if you did have an accident, like, how's it get on the floor? I'm not trying to be too graphic here, but there are layers of protection to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, you know? That's no accident, man.
So you believe it's a random act of well, I'm trying to think of a pun of violence, but a random you think it's a targeted strike, you're saying?
I mean, yeah, otherwise it would end up on the pooper's clothing. It would just be on the floor.
But honestly, like, if I'm not there, it's funny, but if I'm there and grossed out, it's not funny at all.
Totally.
But honestly, like, here's my final word. Punk rock is a lot of fun when it's a little dangerous. Not really dangerous, where you could get killed, but a little danger is great for punk rock, and it's great for art. And this is a little danger, and I approve. No, but I don't want this to become like a trend. Like, remember when spitting was a trend?
Yeah.
Please do not let this become a trend.
No. I mean, my only thought is just, like, you know, you've been, like, unable to go to shows for, like, 16 freaking long months, and you can finally go to a show, and this is how you choose to behave? Like, what the fuck, man? I don't know. I have nothing to add about this. This is insane.
If I was the promoter, I'd be pretty pissed off, frankly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And for the band, it's like you finally get to play a show, and then suddenly there's like shit smeared on the stage. You've waited all this time to play a show, and then you're playing with like shit on the stage next to you. Like, so foul. It's like so lame.
People are animals. They really are.
People are animals. And more. What's the ratio of funny to horrifying about this for you?
fully on the no, wasn't there looking at it. It's funny. If I was there, it would be just absolutely, you know, like, oh my God, have I been exposed to something? And, you know, like, it would be really intense. But no, it's funny to look, like, observe it. But yeah, like, it really doesn't seem like a medical issue, because I had that too. It's like, I don't want to make fun of somebody if they had like an accident or whatever. But then it's like, it sounds like it was a pile of like shit, you know, like just kind of hanging out. So like, how did it get there, you know? So I'd like to know more in one way about the story. But at the same time, like, the person's probably embarrassed. So, like, it's probably, like, the best place to, like, shit your pants at the same time. Because no one knows you. No one knows who you are. You know, you can just kind of fade off into the night.
How do you do that without being caught? You know what I mean?
I know. How did no one notice someone just taking a dump in the middle of the pit? It's just so nuts.
The top comment on Punk News is turd style, and it made me laugh for a good 5 minutes. So just wanted to...
Amazing. See, this is why you can't turn the comments off, John.
It's true.
There are gems.
We would get no turd style without the comments.
Okay. Now, moving on. Hallie, play a song.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wait. Oh, no. Oh, God. I don't have my shit together tonight. Okay. So this was like a band camp find. This is a band from South Korea called Drinking Boys and Girls Choir. Have you guys written about them on Punk News? Is this on your radar at all? Do you know?
I don't think so.
Yeah, this is. I really like this stuff. Anyhow, yeah, they're a band from South Korea. I guess they're like pretty involved in like the queer scene there, and like also like activists. And I just think this stuff is so like fun and spazzy and catchy. And so this is Drinking Boys and Girls Choir with Secret Revenge.
And that was Drinking Boys and Girls Choir with Secret Revenge. We have two stories left. Heavy Leg, the new band featuring Greg Thornburn of Ellen and the Degenerates, Andy Carisha of Up for Nothing, and Josh Gaon of both those bands have released a new single called Ditch My Shadow. John, take it away.
This is a spinoff of the fantastic band Ellen and the Degenerates, which I thought broke up, but it seemed like they did a show like last month or something. I love Ellen and the Degenerates. This new band, Heavy Lag, sounds real good. This track is that kind of a garagey punk kind of FYP, Toys That Kill kind of thing. And I dig it a lot, and I think it rips and rocks and is cool.
Yeah, this is awesome. I've played shows with Ellen and the Degenerates. That's like a fucking great band. I'm like unsurprised that people from this band are doing other cool stuff. I will say that when I go to see Ellen and the Degenerates, like it's the front woman, Elena, is like what totally grabs me because she's just such a magnetic performer. So I'll be interested to see if Heavy Lag can like come out swinging that hard with like the live show aspect. But I think I really, really enjoyed this song. I thought it had like a Jay Retard kind of vibes to it, which is like, yes, only gets a big thumbs up from me.
Why, oh, why did Ellen and the Degenerates break up? They were so good, Hallie. So good.
I don't know. I love that band. Yeah. Yeah, Em, did you like this?
Yeah, I thought the song was really good. I ended up listening to it quite a bit, like yesterday and today. So definitely looking forward to more music coming out from them. I think it'll be, if it's like this song, I think it'll just be, you know, blown out of the water. So our last story tonight is sad. So Lee Scratch Perry has passed away. He passed at Noel Holmes Hospital at the age of 85. And he accomplished a lot with his life. He's an inventor of reggae and dub and produced thousands of songs, including works by Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, Junior Mervin, Max Romeo, Susan Cadogan and Ja Lion, among many others. So, John, you've talked about him quite often. Would you like to share your thoughts?
There's no way we could talk about the massive importance and influence of Lee Scratch Perry in one or even 10 or 30 podcasts. One of the most important producers of all time, one of the most important artists of all time. And like if you look at the amount of music that he produced and put out, it is literally thousands of songs he recorded. It's insane. Not to mention some of the greatest reggae albums of all time. Super Ape, Roast Fish and Cornbread, Junior Mervin's, Police and Thieves, Max Romeo's, the Holy Trinity of reggae, roots reggae, Max Romeo's War in Babylon, Junior Mervin's Police and Thieves, and the Congos, Heart of the Congos record. Mind-blowingly good records. But not only that, is Lee Scratch Perry is very important because he put so much – he introduced experimentation into reggae for sure. Also, he probably created the idea of remixing a song. People just think about that as like nothing – like as a thing. Lee Scratch Perry may very well have invented the idea of remixing. He's certainly one of the main inventors of dub, one of the main inventors of reggae. A lot of people think his song People Funny Boy is the first reggae song. I don't know if you can pinpoint it that way, but nevertheless, an amazing musician. I saw him seven times, and every time was amazing. He was planning on going on tour. Even though he was 85, like he's one of those guys that you never expect is going to pass away. And what was really shocking, like, just like the week before he passed away, like he loved Facebook. And if you went on Facebook and he was on, like you could talk to him on Facebook and he would talk to you, you know, like imagine being like you're sitting at your house and wherever you live, Ohio or wherever. And you're talking to the guy that kind of made Bob Marley be Bob Marley. You're talking to the guy that invented dub. You're talking to the guy that invented remix. You're talking to a guy that recorded with Beastie Boys, Paul McCartney, Andrew WK, you know, this astounding Ari Up. This is like you're talking to him on Facebook and he's just talking to you. One thing is people like to portray Lee Scratch Perry as this crazy, wacky guy that never makes any sense. He probably did have mental issues, but he wasn't nearly as crazy as he would act. And if you forced him to answer properly, then he would go from the crazy, you know, Uncle Lee to like, so Lee, what was it like recording with the Ethiopians? And he'll be like, it was like the wind flying through the mountains, and I heard a dove land on my shoulder, and I laugh and I clap and I make the wind turn into water. It's like, no, what was it like recording with the Ethiopians? And they'll be like, oh, well, Errol Thompson was there and he was on the board and he would run this through the track, you know? It's like honestly, and there are several theories as to why he acted that way, and we won't even get into them here. But like, if you force him to answer, like people thought he was kind of out to lunch, which maybe he was, but if you force him to answer it, bam, like not a photographic memory, but like next step to it, you know? And so the crazy thing was, like, he was clowning around on Facebook, you know, having fun, doing his wacky posts, doing videos of him doing like kung fu kicks and stuff, you know, and then the next week he was dead. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa, yeah. like whoa, you know, which I guess is maybe the best way to go, you know, instead of a prolonged thing. But it's like, it really did feel like he had a lot of, at least several good years of touring and music left in him. I'm just thankful I got to see him as many times as I did. One time I chose to see Morrissey instead of him because it was the same night, and I felt bad for an entire year. But then I did get to see him two more times after that. And an amazing musician. I interviewed him twice, and he was the – one time he was, like, fighting with his wife on the phone the entire time in a super heavy patois, you know. He was – an amazing guy, a weird guy. And there's an amazing book about him called People Funny Boy by David Katz. It's like 600 pages, so it's like a commitment. But like Lee Scratch Perry, if you don't know him, check out the album Super Ape, Police and Thieves, War in Babylon, and start there, and you'll hook automatically, I guarantee you. Hallie, any words on the Mighty Upsetter?
No, I mean, you know, I feel like artistically, this is just such like a life so well lived. You know, I mean, I feel like it was like a year ago on the podcast that we were talking about some like Russian reggae album that he was on. You know, it's just, he kept creating, as you said, you know, really until like the week before he died. We should all be so lucky, you know.
True that.
Yeah.
John, play a song.
Let's play one of the greatest songs ever, maybe the greatest song ever, Lee Scratch Perry doing a recut of, and a remix, if you will, of Max Romeo's Chase the Devil. This is the Lee Scratch Perry version. This is Disco Devil. If you are the beast, the devil, I'm a holy rebel of the highest level by Lee Scratch Perry.
Bye! 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 Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of earth. Devil, I am a demon.
said I'm broke, 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 skank, on the river, man. I said I'm broke, 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 skank, in a boa, man. I said I'm full of mercy. Dolly and I'm right and I'm cold. You're on the road, trouble, no one is here. I said I'm dolly and I'm fast and I'm right. Lord of mercy.
And that was Lee Scratch Perry with Disco Devil.
Fun thing about Lee Scratch Perry, you know what his real name was? It's not Lee Perry. It's
what
Rainford.
Is it?
It's Rainford Hugh Perry, which is not uncommon in Jamaica, where like the people's name isn't like what it is at all. And he never really could explain why they called him Lee Perry instead of Rainford Hugh Perry. the man, you know.
Well, especially because the like scratch part, like generally when there's like that nicknamey part in the middle of the name, then you assume that the other names are
the real.
Yeah. It's like a nickname in the middle of other nicknames.
Oh, that's so cool. It adds another layer. All right, so watch out for the upcoming bonus episode where John interviews the copyrights. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And do you guys have any closing words or anything you want the listeners to know about going forward?
R.I.P. LSP.
Yeah, no. I have no parting thoughts. Stevie Ginger Ale, my friends.
Well, maybe I don't need as much rehearsing as some other folks.
Haley, this can't go on.
What you got to say, Mikey? Yes, Jordan. Whatever you say, Jordan.
Now look here, Haley. It's like this. You straighten up or we're letting you go.
Now, Mikey, are you all right with that?
I'll miss you, but if you're hurting the group, we gotta let you go.
I'm the best thing that ever happened to this group.
Ain't nobody bigger than the group.
Ha! I'm the one selling the records. They're coming to see me.
They're coming to see the Unlovables.
Ain't no one coming to see you, Jordan. You wish you could work it like I do. You wish you could work it like me. But you can't, huh? Because there's only one, Hallie Bullitt. And without her, the Unlovables ain't nothing but a group in search of a Hallie Bullitt. Matter of fact, I've been thinking we should call the group Hallie Bullitt and the Unlovables. Yeah, that sounds good to me. Y'all begging me not to leave. But I refuse to let you go. Yeah. Hallie Bullitt and the Unlovables. What do you say?